Thanks for tuning in to the Eastern Current Saltwater Fishing Podcast presented by Florida Fishing Products. I've been fishing the Florida reels for a few seasons now, and I've been nothing but impressed. The quality and durability of the reels are second to none. The Solas, Bahia, and Osprey CE Pro cover all the bases for your inshore light tackle setups, whether you're a weekend warrior or a year-round guide. If you like pulling on big fish, they have you covered as well with the Resolute Series reels. Go check out the reels online at floridafishingproducts.com or click the link in the podcast show notes. Today's an episode I'm super excited about. I get to sit down with my good buddy Matt Phillips, who is the builder and mastermind behind Cape Fear Skiffs. They're an all-aluminum skiff built right here in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they are built to stand the test of time and to beat up one. It's a skiff for me. I don't have one, but maybe one day it will be the skiff I'm running. But man, are they some awesome boats, and I know y'all are going to enjoy this podcast episode. Stay tuned. Being on the water day in and day out throughout the season, our boats take a beating. Whether we need fiberglass work, new non-skid, hull painting, rigging, and electrical, or full-blown custom restoration, Brock Boatworks has you covered. Specializing in high-end skiffs, bay boats, and center consoles, their attention to detail and customer service ensures that you have the work done right the first time so you don't have to get it done again. You can find their information in the podcast show notes. Matt, thanks for joining me. We're sitting in your shop here where you build the Cape Fear skiffs, and we've been doing some video work and everything, but excited to sit down and chat with you about, you know, about the whole process.
Glad to finally have this chat. We've been talking about it for a year.
It's been on the books for quite a while, which is I like what you did, though, because when you first started, I was like, let's do a podcast. And you're like, let me build one. Let me get a year or two into this, and then let's do a podcast. And so I think that there's a lot more value to be had here in the podcast now. But let's start out, kind of just give us your backstory, where you're from, how fishing has brought you to the process of wanting to build your own skiff.
Yeah, so I'm from the great city of Salisbury, North Carolina. Fishing is honestly about one of my earliest memories. No, I started when I was like 3 or 4. It's always just been, you know, bass fishing, pond fishing growing up. Until I came here for college, like around 08 UNCW, and lucky enough to meet some local guys that got me into the saltwater scene. Christian Wolf, he was still in high school, and we'd rock out the Ranger Banshee. And so I kind of got spoiled really early on to start my saltwater fishing career just right on, you know, an early flats boat for around here. One of the few in town at the time. So instantly fell in love with just that whole aspect. It really kind of brought the bass fishing, pond fishing into just a bigger world. Ripping my Shakespeare stuff apart, you know, so I really had to step up my game then. But it basically just enhanced my passion at that point. It's something I had my whole life. And so that just kind of grew over the next, you know, I lived here from 08 to 2015 before I moved to the mountains for a year. But in that time, you know, inshore fishing became pretty much my main hobby. And that eventually kind of grows into, never was a fly fisherman until I did it for a couple years. And once you do something every day, you just look for the more challenging aspects. So that got me into the fly fishing and the sight fishing, which, if you learn anything, this place is probably one of the harder places to sight fish because we don't have the crystal clear water, but teaches you to learn your water and shallow water. And really all that kind of brings in together why you need like a super shallow boat, because a lot of our sight fishing is basically as low as water as possible. We're trying to see those fish, you know, backs out of the water, crawling on the oysters. You know, that's how our sight fishing goes. So that kind of got me to where I'm at now. Once I came back to Wilmington a couple years later from being up in the mountains, just tired of trout fishing in the mountains, came back down here. Trying not to say too much, it's not working very well.
You can say as much as you want.
So when I did live here, in my 20s, I got really big into Jeeps and off-roading and just destroying my daily driver for no reason. You know, just having no way to get to work the next day because I just decided to go jump my Jeep in the back of the woods on the river. You know, just really stupid stuff. But with that comes learning basically how to weld and fix your stuff on the hip. So started welding, you know, picked up a welder, got a bunch of my buddies to go in $20 a piece to buy this Harbor Freight welder so we could tack our unibody Jeep Cherokees back together. And that's kind of how we got started. Started building bumpers and suspension. And for a long time, my plan was always to kind of push that farther. I enjoyed doing that more than obviously going to school. So my plan was kind of to move out west for a while and try to get into the off-road, you know, racing scene. That, you know, it never really, I almost made the jump a few times, but it was too hard to leave the coast and leave North Carolina. So I ended up staying here. But all that kind of worked its way back because the whole metalworking fabrication thing became a passion of my own. And then along with fishing, shallow water fishing, it was kind of a way where I've always also wanted to be in the fishing scene, but not necessarily be a guide, you know, try to keep my fishing time as selfish as possible, just about me. So it was always like, how can I bring these two things together? So it just made sense. I've never really wanted to build glass boats. I've done work on Ginus, you know, I've gutted a Ginu, I've gutted some fiberglass John boats, you know, built those decks. It was cool, you know, they came out cool. But it's just nothing that I was ever like, yeah, man, I want to build some glass boats. But aluminum boats, whether it was skiffs or not, was just always something that I was like, yeah, it'd be cool to build one day, get into the aluminum welding thing.
For sure. I think that's so cool. Two of the things that really stuck out were what I was thinking is in so many different realms of fishing, whether it's bass fishing or trout fishing, there's parts of that world of fishing that are so important. Tools, like with bass fishing, it might be the electronics. It doesn't really matter too much about the boat. Or, you know, with river fishing, it's all about, you know, the correct presentation and having the right rods for the job. Or like yesterday, I went crappie fishing and the boat didn't matter, but like the baits and the setup were so important. But, you know, for these fish that we love to chase, the redfish in shallow water, we know that they're pretty much going to eat anything that's going to fit in their mouth. And it's all about the presentation. And really the most important piece to that, besides your sunglasses, to be able to see in the water is the boat. Like the boat is such a huge piece of it. And I think what is so cool about what you're doing and how you said you might not ever want to get into guiding is like when you do guide, whether you love guiding or not, and you love sharing with people those days in the water, it does take a little bit away from that fishing. But building the boats, like your own fishing, like you said, your own selfish, like on the water time to fish, but building the boats, I feel like it probably fuels that fire for the fishing instead of like takes away some of the fire a little bit, which is something I'm very jealous about. Not that I don't love fishing and love guiding, but I think that that's kind of a cool aspect, is like building the perfect tool for your passion.
Right. So yeah, so we're working on building the demo, but we do have, you know, an order to build for a buddy. And you really like, I'm thinking like, how am I going to make this boat like as awesome? And so, you know, he's a big flood tag guy, and, you know, just thinking about the things that he's going to see on this boat. And, you know, one day if he has kids and he still has his boat, since it's a Luna, it could last forever, you know, just the things, thinking about how the jumbos that I started fishing on were always somebody's grandparents, you know, that they've had for years, and the things those boats saw, and then the things that we put it through, you know, literally pushing that boat from Buzzards Bay to the ramp with how many times we would get stuck. No GPS, flip phones, you know, like you had to learn it really based on what you hit, and having no lights, you know, we'd go to gig at night and our lights would burn up and we'd be in the river outside of Bald Head and we're like, yeah, we got to get back and it's low tide. So all those, you know, the things that these aluminum boats have seen. And so just thinking that the boats that we're going to build have that same possibility, and you know, it's cool because you could be all over the place, whether it's on the Gulf or here down in Florida, you know.
I think that the aluminum is a huge benefit for so many anglers, especially myself. You were talking about it in some of the video stuff we're doing earlier, but just how you beat your gear up. I'm the same way. Like,
yeah,
I destroy stuff, and so the stuff that I keep buying, and that's, well, maybe not even keep buying, but like my Nautilus reels, like they've never had any more than just being sprayed off under the gunwale in my boat, and I've had the majority of them since I started guiding saltwater. Not the majority of them, but I've have the ones that I had, you know, years and years ago when I started are, you know, just as solid as the ones I've gotten just a few years ago, which is awesome. But it might suck for Nautilus because I'm not, you know, people aren't buying more and more reels. But and there's a lot of reel companies like that. But like the boat aspect and the aluminum and the fact that it's going to last forever is so cool. I mean, people like fiberglass. People like to, you know, redo those old boats. But there's a lot of people that are going to just make a living just because they're redoing old fiberglass boats that fall apart over time. Not that there's anything wrong with fiberglass, but I think that aluminum is going to find a forever home with a lot of anglers out there.
Yeah. And we were kind of talking earlier, like I love fiberglass boats. You know, I love all the, you know, options you have, the contours you have. You make the boat whatever you want, you know, you just shape it, form it. And then, but the biggest, you know, kind of thing is, every couple of years there's something new, you know, it was Kevlar infused, carbon infused, full carbon. So it's always kind of like keeping up. You're going to buy a very expensive carbon boat, but then, you know, within the next 5 years, you know, it's already going to be a newer technology, whether it's just a lighter carbon or I don't know, silk infused carbon, who knows, you know. But with aluminum, the material's been here forever. It's always going to be here forever. The alloys used for saltwater aluminum have pretty much been accepted longer than I've been alive. Like, these are alloys, you know, that people just, you know, the properties, you know, this is what you use. And, you know, you glue it together and there you go. It's the material that God made, and it's going to be here long after I'm gone. And whereas, you know, fiberglass boat in 20 years, who knows what they'll be doing, which isn't a bad thing. It's right. Great because evolution's what keeps us going, you know, perfecting an art, you know, you wouldn't want boats built 40 years ago unless they've been redone. So it's nice that there's progress, but it's also nice knowing that what you have is just going to always be what it is.
I think saying that too, like one of the things that you were sharing with me and that I was already assuming is the ability to easily repair the boat. And you don't have to go to a boat builder. Like if you're on a trip or something and something happens, you can just go find somebody that can weld aluminum and fix. Like talk about that a little bit
even less than that, man. If you get, you know, go get you a hammer and some JB welding, it'll get you, you know, sand your paint off. And but you can do that with fiberglass too. But with aluminum, it's easy. If you get a big gouge and you can kind of work the metal, try to get it out. You can always cut it out, re-weld it. I mean, everybody's riveted boats have had rivets replaced years and years. It's very easy. You know, you don't have to be, if you have an issue with the fiberglass boat somewhere, you have to find a fiberglass specialist. If you have an issue with an aluminum boat somewhere, you just got to find a welder, and they're all over. You can go to community college and say, which one of these dudes want to make $20? And he'll get you by, you know.
For sure. That's cool. I've just always been so fascinated about anything built out of metal and welded. Like even you drive down the road, some country road, and there's like some dude in his front yard, he's got all these metal sculptures that he's, you know, welded pieces of different, you know, metal junk together to make some statue or something like that. It's fascinating, and it's definitely an art that, you know, all the aluminum work and metal work is an art that not anybody can just get into. It's not like finger painting, you know. You got to have some tools and some knowledge to go about it, which is really cool. But one thing that I was surprised about spending time on your boat, pulling around and checking it out, is how quiet it was. Cause that's always, you know, been something that people are always nervous about with aluminum boats and skiffs, but also just in fishing. What are some of the features on y'all's boat that does make it, why is it so quiet?
So, I mean, I've pulled jumbos that it's like you're holding a mattress up against the wind, and every little cheese breeze is playing a drum. And a lot of that comes really, you know, I always thought it was material, but from this I found it was really like hull design, how that water is able to roll around. And so the conchfish is a very literal representation of an already, you know, tried and tested hull. And it's just, it, you know, allows that chop and wind to just roll around the hull. And same with the revised hull, you know, it follows those same lines, even with even less pieces. So it gives you kind of a smoother, refined finish. But I was honestly, I was surprised. I had no idea how it was going to perform. But when I pulled it, You know, honestly, I was like, this is kind of quieter than a lot of the fiberglass boats I've pulled. Not necessarily that it is, just expecting to hear, you know, maybe more resonance or something. But, you know, I've to make it loud, you really have to, I've had to really try to get it to make that hull slap. And a lot of it is, you know, some of, like my older boat, it had lower gunwale height. It was a Beavertail Osprey. And so I had lower gunwale height, which the idea behind that was pretty much so it didn't get blown as much, but that brought the spray rails lower. So I would get a lot more, you know, just chop off those spray rails. And I mean, this boat, again, I really kind of learned a lot. It's more about hull design than necessarily hull material as far as the pulling, you know, quietness. Now, if you smack an oyster, I mean, it's going to be loud no matter what boat it is.
Right. That's the truth. The do you think the thickness of the aluminum it makes it quieter too, like compared to a John boat?
I would say
an ignorant question. I have no clue.
No, I mean, I would probably say that definitely has something into it. You know, you get a lot lighter tapping. And also my boats, they're 1/8 inch thick, 125, which when you look at like the finer, like Express and all the nice duck boats, most of the time 125 is as thick as they build. That's just like the accepted, you know, thickness for like a nice strong boat. You'll find thicker ones like down in the Gulf where guys are running like crawfish farms and stuff, and they'll build them out 3/16. But mostly 125 eighth inch is just the accepted like best material thickness for a boat. So I'm already trying to use like the best thickness possible. And those are the boats you see guys that will crawl up on oyster beds. They'll run into the boat ramp. But I think that does have a lot to do with the, you know, there's less vibration, less resonance with the thicker metal. One thing that definitely helps is I'm very minded on keeping the metal resonance and vibration low. So using materials like the Raptor liner and foaming, you know, flotation foam as much as possible just to kind of, you know, keep that down and different deadening paints that we're testing out. So it's still like a big thing. I still want to make the quietest boat I possibly can. Because a lot of the noises you'll get with the aluminum is more or less like running noise when you got the vibration. It's super quiet on pole, so if I can just, you know, focus on whatever I can to keep the material quiet, then it will be just as quiet. And as you even said, that it sounds like a carbon boat almost, you know, like it's very similar to your Maverick. And we went out on a pretty windy day. And
yeah, for sure.
And yeah. So
even this morning, windy and choppy, and you don't hear any metal. I wasn't hearing metal noise.
No, you just kind of get that shaking noise, you know, because it is a dense material. Carbon's very dense. So you get like that, you know, nothing beats good polyester board that absorbs everything, or a polyester boat, polyester surfboard. They all kind of absorb shock and vibration, but you also end up, you know, with a weaker product at that point. So just stronger materials,
for sure,
you know, are much denser.
Yeah, I remember I used to surf a ton, and I haven't surfed in years, but kind of in the revolution of, like, epoxy boards coming out on top of polyester boards and how much skatier and lighter and louder and that chatter. Like, it's kind of like my Maverick is like a – sounds like a – when I'm running in, like – it's big chop's fine, but it's like that textury chop, and you hear that, like, run while you're running. But
so a funny story is, the first epoxy Maverick I was on was a few years ago down in Charleston, and I'd never really been on an epoxy boat, but when we took off, I was like, this thing sounds like NSP. Like,
it does.
I said, I don't think the guy I was fishing with was a surfer, but so he didn't get my joke. I thought it was pretty good, but
yeah, no, that is a good joke. That is a good joke. The old indestructible NSP surfboard.
You know, run it over and it'll still go. You hit a choppy wave, it might throw you 3 feet. But
even more so than the NSP is the dang. Remember Bic when Bic, mm-hmm, the pin company was making surfboards.
Same thing, you know. Nothing like
about a hundred pound
pin
surfboard
logo on your surfboard. Can't say anything. I've surfed a lot of them.
Well, it's funny. This is a total tangent, but like how companies like that get in, like there, it's a pin company, and all of a sudden they're like, let's make surfboards. So
you know what? We have a lot of plastic. Yeah. You know, let's just mold it. I'm surprised there aren't kayaks and everything.
That's true. Yes, it's funny that they went surfboards first. But No, I was super impressed with that. And the boat, the first boat that y'all built, you weren't even using all of those sound editing agents in that boat yet, were you?
No, there is. So the first boat's a homemade boat. You know, that's how it's registered. Because I had no plans to sell it. Really didn't even have plans to start a business when I started. It was more just for me. But there's no flotation foam. You know, it's not a Coast Guard approved boat. So there's none of that. It does have Raptor liner, like, in the floor to test it out. But none of, you know, that's about it. And I was just using that. Really, the Raptor liner came about because I was trying to keep the heat down from the aluminum. And there's mixed reviews about the sound deadening. So it's really just... You know, it was something I was thinking about, but that boat was really, let's just get it done and let me make it nice enough to fish and get started with another one. So, yeah, I really didn't, it was in my mind, but it wasn't like a big, it was just like, it is what it is. We'll just see how it comes out.
For sure. And that's the boat that's already mind-blowingly quieter than I thought it would be. So it's just going to go up from there, which is really, really cool. One of the other features that I thought was so cool about your boat was I just brain farted hard about what I was talking about, but so the way that you've built the first boat, what are some of the changes in that first boat that you've decided to play into the next boat?
So a lot of the changes we made are more for us as far as like buildability. You know, the conchfish is a literal representation of the conchfish. And so keeping the bow profile, keeping every little, you know, the dead rise of the keel all the way back, keeping all that stuff as literal as possible was very important because it does have the conchfish nomenclature on it. You know, like if you're building that boat, it has to match that already known hole.
Yeah.
So we started with that just because that was – honestly, the Waterman, you know, the Whipray, all that has always been one of my favorite boats.
It's such a nostalgic boat. Everybody knows it.
You know, it is. You know, you can see how so much designing has stemmed from those boats. And obviously, Chris Morjon has designed a lot of boats since then. There's a lot of new builders coming out, which is, you know, it's good. It gives people a lot of options. It's nice being that I'm pretty much like one of the only aluminum ones. There's a few people coming out, but there's a lot of new glass boats coming out. They're all cool. But even them, they all kind of, you see similarities in design. So basically this design was as, you know, literal of the conchfish as you could get. Now, it doesn't necessarily make the easiest boat to build in aluminum. And I knew this going into it. My relationship with Nathan, the architect, you know, he had actually designed me a boat before, like a year before, because he kind of designed me a really simplified skiff based off of, it was pretty cool. And this started 3 years ago when I actually kind of started getting into this, but he designed me a skiff based off of like a North Carolina shrimping skiff, kind of like a Harker's Island skiff.
Yeah,
like
that's
an
cool.
Old school skiff. It was really cool. But very simple as those boats. A lot of those boats are like plywood boats, you know.
Not many angles or anything going on.
Yeah, nothing crazy. A little flare up top, you know, but really flat. And I had every intention to build it. And then I got super busy at work. You know, work just took off and it kind of got put on the back burner. But so when I told him that when I kind of reconnected with him like a little over a year later, and I was like, I want to build the conchfish, and that's all I want to build if I'm going to do it. He was like, let's do it. He's like, it's probably not going to be the easiest boat. You know, it's going to have some pretty complicated curves, a lot of, you know, compound curves and stuff, especially, you know, that nobody's done it. You're pretty much going to be figuring this out. And I was like, let's do it. I don't care. And so just in building that boat, it was a very important process for me. And if that's the only boat I ever built, I'd be complete, you know, I'd be fine. I'd rock that boat for forever. And, I'd take that boat all over. I'd probably turn it into a center console or a side console, because right now it's a tiller. But instead, I took what I learned from that boat and I said, you know, Nathan, I'd like to make some revisions. I'd like to kind of change how we form this. I'd like to make it something that I could build over and over. Because I've had such a, you know, there was such an interest in people people were like, hey, would you build these? At first, I was like, I don't know if I want to build them in the future. But there was such an interest that I was like, you know, it'd be kind of dumb not to use this as a way to get into an industry that I've always wanted to be into and kind of bring back, like, my my passion and hobbies in both. So I was like, well, as I'm building the Kongfish, I was like, let me figure out what I want in my own personal boat, you know, to last years and years. So we kind of changed the bottom profile, changed like the side profile. They still follow, you know, when you get into the footprint of the Kongfish, it still follows that footprint that everybody loves. You know, the deck's the same size, the sides, you know, the gunnels, everything's pretty much the same. We just kind of formed the boat a little differently. And we simplified some things here and there just for us that nobody's really going to know because they're not part of the building process, but just things that make it repeatable. So it doesn't take me a year, doesn't take us a year to build these boats. You know, we can hopefully tackle a few builds a year. And then, you know, we changed the, I really like when the spray rails integrate into the sides of the boats. I like that because it leaves the transom, the stern open for when you're poling to not, you know, obviously when you're poling, the stern's lower in the water. So it really prevents you getting, you know, side chop on your spray rails, which happens on other boats. But, brain fart.
No, you're good.
Besides
both allowed
that,
three.
Yeah, mulligan. Besides that, you know, when you look at it, it's still really going to look very reminiscent of the boat that everybody likes, you know. We did, you know, kind of change the transom a little bit where to really form that metal all the way back, took like instead of making a flat transom, which a lot of people like, but I've also been on newer boats that have a little dead rise on the transom, and I've just been so surprised at how well that works out. Everybody thinks that if you don't have a flat transom, it's not gonna pull in 4 inches,
right?
But really, it's got a 2-degree dead rise that gradually rounds out, so I don't have that point on the bottom.
Yeah,
it's 2 degrees and then kind of rounds out, so it still gives you that running plane that everybody likes, but theoretically should allow, you know, a little thrust on the sides to help it, you know, navigate and turn a little better.
So this new boat designing, as far as power goes, if you were to go tiller or console, or not that you're designing, that you're building, what is y'all's recommended, you know, performance on that?
So the at least a 60, I am still working with how much flotation foam I want to use. Theoretically, when you do the transom and all the calculations, it can hold a much larger motor. I'm trying to see if I'm comfortable with a 70. You know, everybody wants a 70. I'd love to see a 70 on one just because it would haul. I'll probably stick with the 60 because it's a happy medium between weight and speed. I'd love to see a 70 and just rock a 70 and do 45 going down the ICW.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to be around, for a tiller, 60 is the most you can do. But I think for remote steering, I'll probably do it at a 70. And that's only if the flotation requirements make sense. If I don't have to lose hatch space, you know, because the 70 is in a different category for the Coast Guard. It bumps up the weight. so it just depends. You know, some people have asked me if I could rate it for like 4 people. Just the flotation requirements for that, just it doesn't really make sense sometimes. So I'm trying to make it to where you and your buddies can go out and have ample gear without jumping over your capacity tag. But most likely it'll be between 60 and 70.
I mean, so many skiffs out there day in and day out, guides and recreational anglers are using them well over their rated capacity on the water. So
right.
I don't want to get into that too much.
Well,
but
hey man, if you want to do it, throw a 90 on it, you know, do whatever, right. But just know that's your own liability.
So
you know,
what are your performance specs as far as draft, top speed, you know, how shallow can you jump up on the boat you've got now that you've built already? And what does that look like on the new boat?
So on the
kind of a similar question, what I just asked, but
yeah, we'll get through it. On the current Kongfish, when we were just testing out the boat with no motor, I think we'd draft like no top deck or anything, just the hull, would draft like an inch. And then threw a couple guys in it, we were drafting a couple inches. Once you actually deck it out and you and the hull's completed, you know, the hull completed without, you know, pulling platform and stuff is like 490 pounds. So it's under 500 pounds. And that will float like right at the 3 or 4 inch mark. Once you throw like the pulling platform and once you put on a motor, it will happily float like 5 inches with nobody else on it.
Yeah.
Once you get some people on it, you know, with two people, it floats like I've had some, you know, I drew handy little ruler on the side. I just don't want to be as honest as possible and not just tell people it's a 4 inch boat and it's floating, you know, drafting 7. But with people looking, with just me and another person in light gear, you know, it will draft like at like 5 3/4 and 6 inches. And I've put, you know, there's been 3 over 200 pounds dudes on there. And so, you know, you got with a bunch of gear, you know, a big cooler and stuff. And we were even then at like the 8 inch mark. So it's extremely shallow. When everybody I've taken out has been in, very, you know, surprised. You know, Marty has a outlaw, and it's almost like obviously his outlaw is shallower, but it is just
it's a much smaller boat though.
Yeah, and it's carbon, and it's super nice. But like to have an 18-foot, 72-inch draft boat that maybe just like a notch or two, you know, deeper than that, it's really, you know, it's been awesome. It's been a great surprise because I was like, you know, once I put the motor on, I'm still going to be, I assume I'll probably be 7 inches like everybody else. But no, it's very surprising. And then with the 60 horsepower Tohatsu, top speed is, I think I've gotten it like 36, 37. And fortunately, it might just be because it's the tiller, you know, with the center console, I might not have to use as much trim tab. But, like, if you take those tabs off and you just, like, jump around, I've jumped up to 39.
Yeah.
So, if the center console, obviously, will be a little heavier. But sometimes moving those batteries forward.
Yeah, it'll move the weight forward, too.
Yeah, sometimes you don't have to use as much tab. I mean, I think it might be able to run a little faster without having to use any tab down. But, either way, I mean, 36 is kind of hauling in a little tin can, so.
Yeah, for sure. I think one thing people don't realize, too, is the less you draft, like those boats that barely draft anything, are annoying to pull because they slide. You have to have a little bit of boat down in the water to actually really be able to pull and make quick turns and track well. Like if it's just a flat pancake on the bottom that's not drafting anything, it slides so bad when pulling. It doesn't track nearly as well, which is one thing I've noticed with some of the little boats.
So that's what those inset chines are for. And what's cool about this design is not, you know, you got the inset chine and then it also is, you know, a tiny bit of metal hangs down below, which kind of acts as a little catch. But yeah, when we were first testing it out, it was drafting so shallow that with just me with no top deck on, it was drafting so shallow that I could hear water splashing underneath the inset chine. So I was like, I might have to make this boat heavier just so the chines are underneath the water. But they definitely, they do make a big difference. You know, I've been on very, you know, little boats with no chines, very simple skiffs. And I mean, you're just like a plastic bag out there getting blown around.
Right. Yeah, that it's been, it makes it tough to pull very, looking for the word, but to be able to pull with precision, you need a boat that tracks well. So
yeah, you don't want to duck walk your way or crab walk your way down a bank, like throwing shadows everywhere.
Right, exactly. And you're throwing waves and water and whatnot. So no, I think that's awesome and really cool. I mean, you look at, I remember what you were talking about earlier as far as kind of simplifying the process of y'all's build. I mean, you look at any successful company, and that's how they like look at Amazon. They streamline. They got robots packing boxes and stuff. So figuring out ways to make it simpler. I think when we were talking earlier, you were saying that it was a lot of pieces of metal on the back of the first build, and you're able to simplify it, get less pieces of metal to have to bend and get to work together and whatnot. So I think that's cool. And y'all's shop's awesome. We're sitting here with the boat behind us, looking at the boat. I mean, I love my boat, but I think this might be in my future one day.
Come on.
So what to you, what's the most exciting part, you know, we'll kind of round it out with this, about building these boats for people?
I think the most exciting thing is just kind of sharing, knowing like where these boats are going to go. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to guide, but I love fishing with friends and seeing friends catch fish and kind of being that, a part of that, like not necessarily taking you to the fish, but saying, here's your tool, you know, use it for forever. And just seeing, like, you know, there's a lot of these boat companies have great followings that really produce some really good stuff. So I would love to just see my boats used all over, you know, like you see those guys down in like Arkansas and Louisiana that just ride their boats over land and do the most
jumping
reckless
beaver dams and stuff.
Yeah, the most reckless stuff. Please, somebody put on a mud motor and just do the most ridiculous stuff. You know, really test what we build. I would love to just one day see somebody just absolutely demolishing a boat. And it, as long as it's holding up, you know, don't demolish it and then call me out online, you know. But put it through the ringer, and that's really like what I hope to see eventually.
Yeah, for sure. You're gonna create the off road world of flat skiffs. Yeah. Like you're talking about your Jeeps. Like people, what can this flat skiff do? That's pretty awesome. So, if people want to talk to you about these boats, connect with you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
So, most honestly, from the start, I've had such a good following and just a lot of support on Instagram. You know, I was surprising at how many people are really interested and have given me support. So, you can hit me up on Instagram. Also, there is like a very simple website, just capefearskiffco.com or capefearskiffcompany.com. They'll both take you there, and that will give you an email that you can just email me if you're interested in pricing. Again, we've started, you know, so many people, I was trying to hold off, but so many people wanted pricing, and so many people wanted the option to get in line. And I was, you know, we've been talking about doing this for over a year. Like, I want to make sure it's right. I want to make sure I'm doing the, you know, building the best boat possible. So I've never been in a rush. It's never been, you know, get rich quick or any of that. It's, you know, figure out how to make the best boat. So
it's a passion project.
Right. And something I want to last for a long time. It's not just do this for a year and peace out. So I haven't really been in a hurry, but so many people are asking. So I finally was like, here, you know, email me. I'll send you some pricing. We do have a build. I'm not really, you know, I could take a couple more builds, you know, but in the future, we're going to kind of do the small build list thing. I don't want to take somebody's money and you sit here and wait for 2 years, you know, for a boat. So it's more like small scale, you know, take like 5 or 10, you know, maybe 10 boats at a time once we really get it going. But it's going to be a very small scale build thing, you know, try to keep it like you're part of the family, part of the group. So again, if you want to talk to me, that's cool. I'd love it. You know, I love all the support people have. Just hit me up on Instagram or check the website. And
Instagram again?
Instagram is just Cape Fear Skiff Co.
Okay, sweet.
Super simple, you know, just Cape Fear Skiff Co.
Cape Fear Skiff Co. Yeah. If I just type in C-A-P right now, you pop up. So it's, I've searched it quite a few times. But yeah, check him out on Instagram and reach out and chat with him about the boat. And I think that this is going to be something pretty awesome and a boat that is perfect for where we are, the coastal Carolinas, North and South Carolina, and all over the eastern Gulf Coast. It's going to be a great boat, but, you know, we've got some pretty treacherous waters to pull and to run.
Fear.
Yeah, it's the Cape Fear.
It's named adamantly.
Exactly.
You know, but again, I'm a very transparent person. You know, I'm terrible at lying. I don't have a poker face. So normally when people, you know, people want to talk, I'm just wide open. So I'm not like, you know, I'm wide open to talk about it.
I thought I was good at lying, and my wife told me now that I've got this thing I do with my bottom lip if I'm not telling the truth, and so now she just nail me every time I'm trying to fib about something. So
I look like the Joker when I'm trying to lie. Like, I just got the biggest smile because I think it's funny that I'm trying to get over, so I can't.
Yeah, that's
I can't
awesome.
Even do it.
That's perfect. Well, thanks for joining me on the podcast, and I hope to do some more in the future.
Yeah.
And be on the lookout because we've been filming a couple times, filmed here in the shop. We filmed on the water. We're going to drop a video after this podcast so y'all can go check it out, see the boats in action, check out a little bit of the build and see Matt and hear him talk about the boat and really be able to feel the passion behind what he's doing. So excited to be able to do this with you and look forward to chatting again in the future, yeah, man.
Glad to finally be at a point where we could actually have something to talk about.
No, you made me wait a long time. I'm really not that patient of a person. Well, guys, thanks for checking out another Eastern Current podcast, and we will talk to you in the next one. Later.